Okay, for Shri of Toldos, our synergy and our parallels are quite fascinating because one might notice that the Shri of Toldos is very similar in structure to Shri of Chayisara. It's even shorter. It's four psukim long. And one might say, okay, this is very different than 2 weeks ago when we had the Akedah in Parshas Vayera. What is there possibly to say about this? So you will soon see that there is so much to say, I don't know if we'll finish in time. But there is, and once again, I consider this an affirmation of our One Aliyah a Year program, because this is an Aliyah that you would, again, there's so much drama in the beginning, in the middle of the Parsha. I don't know how many different Torah that you will hear over the weekend that will focus on these four psukim. There's so much else going on, and Baruch Hashem that we have the opportunity to do things a little differently and to take note, and you'll see, we'll see how much we can squeeze in the time that we have. So, these four or five psukim, it is five psukim, they read as follows. So basically the aftermath of the whole incident with Bechora, we find Vayishlach Yitzchak as Yaakov, Vayelach Padena Aram, Elavon ben Besul Harami Achirivka, Eim Yaakov Esav. By the way, part of what seems challenging about wondering what you could say about this Aliyah is in these brief five psukim, it seems like so many things are very basic and repeated. And that's a part of what we have to figure out, why we find the same ideas coming up again and again, one pasuk after the other, in the short five psukim. What exactly is the message here? So first we find, okay, so Yitzchak sends away Yaakov, and he goes towards Padan Aram, to Laban ben Besuel Harami, who, you may recall, is the brother of Rivka, who, you may also recall, is the mother of Yaakov and Esau. So just in that pasuk, what is going on? Quite a bit. Because first of all, this one point that Rabbeinu Bachi writes, if they sent him away, so we have this notion that Yaakov was punished for being away from home all those years, so it was their plan. So shouldn't we understand that to be a mechila? Shouldn't we understand that to be that that was their desire? So why should he be in trouble for that? So Rabbeinu Bachi just writes that what the original plan was, they just wanted him to find a shidduch and come right back. They should just get married and then return to them. But he fell in love with Rachel and had this whole 7-year plan. So that ended up being a much bigger issue, especially in the absence of Skype or any other kinds of communications. You could see how it took on a whole different dimension that they weren't expected. So that's where the issue is. Okay, so the notion of going to Lavan, here the Malbim has a comment to that emphasis, El Lavan, that his plan, Yitzchak's plan, was also Yaakov's plan, rather Yaakov's plan was to go to Lavan, among other reasons, because Lavan was a gangster, was a strong man, and since he has Esav coming after him, so that should hopefully provide some protection, a point that we will explore more in a moment. The pasuk emphasizes that he is the brother of Rivka, so I emphasize that. So here Rabbeinu Bachi comments again that this is to defend Yaakov. You might ask, why is he going to an environment of such shady people? So it's explained that there is a lot of good in the family too, and that's what justifies it. So that gets us into a number of interpretations. This pasuk alone is going to take us a while on the last words of the pasuk. So here a lot has already seemed like it's unnecessary, all of this listing of who's who and what's what. So Rashi has one comment here on this pasuk. And the one comment, you might say, you could have skipped. Right? Because what does Rashi say? You have a chumash in front of you. Rashi doesn't seem to help us so much. It says, Ein Yotzud, on the phrase, the word specifically, on Ein Yaakov Esav, that we're told that, oh, who's this Rivka? Rivka is the mother of Yaakov and Esav. So to that, Rashi comments, Eini yodeya ma melamdenu. I don't know what this is there for. I don't know what this is teaching us. So here we only have this one Rashi in the pasuk, and maybe you would think we could have done with no Rashis. What exactly is that coming to tell us? So here the Shefer Shar Beis Rabin writes that you would think Rashi could just say nothing if he doesn't know what the point is. Although the truth is, it's something, because he's calling your attention to the fact that it seems to be unnecessary and he doesn't know the answer. So I'm not sure if it would have been better if Rashi would have said nothing. And there is a lesson that comes from Meini Yodea Mamalam Deinu. But what he writes, the Shaar Beis Ravim, is that Rashi knew that there were many, many different ways to understand the significance of these words. And therefore, what Rashi is telling you is that out of all the ways to interpret what these words are here for, I don't know which one it is. I don't know why this pasuk is here, what it's coming to teach us. So in the Shaar Beis Ravim himself, he has about 5 different interpretations. In other Svarim, there are other interpretations. I'll just share with you a few. Again, there's a lot said just on this one non-comment of Rashi. There is quite a lot. So just to share with you some of the interpretations. So in the Bechor Shor, he writes a pretty technical interpretation that apparently there were other Rivkas. Like nowadays, it's a pretty popular name. So then too, it was a common name. So therefore, we have to explain that which one we're talking about. The Netziv has a different understanding here. The Netziv writes in his commentary on Chumash that the reason he was going here specifically was because he was family, and that this is the cover story for his running away from Esav. He didn't want Esav to catch on that this was all planned to escape him. So because of the whole family connection, that this is the brother of the mother of him, so that would be the cover story, that would be why he's going there, and that should buy him some time. In the Shaar Beis Ravim, he quotes from the Sefer Divrei Shlomo, a similar pshat, but a little bit differently. He said that the way the Netziv says it, it sounds like this was the cover story he was giving both to Yitzchak and to Esav. But the pshat that the Shaar Beis Ravim quotes is that this was Yitzchak's plan, that he wanted to make sure that Yaakov would be safe from Esav's pursuit. So he figured that, okay, this is the household. Oh, it's the uncle who is the uncle of both Yaakov and Esav. So it wouldn't look like he's running away from Esav, because just like Yaakov's welcome there, Esav is welcome there also. It's the uncle of both of them. But still he'd be better off because, you know, first of all, I think we discussed this in another context recently, but you create a little bit of an effort that already is an advantage. So Yaakov is safer from Esav at a faraway place where Esav could also be welcome than he is staying with him where he is. So that'll create a little bit of interruption. So that was Yitzchak's thinking, that okay, it won't be so obvious that he's running away because he's going to a place where theoretically Esav would be equally welcome, but it would be better off than staying with Esav because it'll create some distance and maybe that will help. And he goes on to say that that's pshat at the beginning of Vayishlach, when Yaakov says to Esav, "Im Lavan Garti Vayichar Arata," I've been living with Lavan, and that's what's keeping me. So Rashi has a famous pshat there, which is a different direction, but just in terms of the pashut reading of the pasuk, that he was saying, "Oh, you shouldn't think I've been running away from you, Esav. You shouldn't think I've been hiding from you all this time. I was with family. I was visiting Uncle Lavan, so that's what kept me. Oh, and how nice to see you. I'm so happy. There's no issues between us whatsoever." In the Sefer Emes Yaakov, Rebakov Kamenetsky, so he understands that the whole point is the order, Eim Yaakov Esav, that Yaakov is mentioned first, that this is to confirm that Yaakov has prevailed here, that now Yaakov is considered to be the Bechor, that he was now with the title of the oldest. And that's because we see that this connects to Pasuk in the previous Aliyah. If you look back for a second, so in Pasuk Dalid, the language is, right before this Aliyah, the last Pasuk before this Aliyah, is Yitzchak says, "V'yitem lecha es birkas Avraham lecha ulzaracha itach, lurishdecha es eretz migurecha asher nasan elokim le'Avraham." So he's saying that you'll get all this bracha, and what's the condition from the bracha? So if you look before that, pasuk beis, "Kum lech paden Avraham beis abesuel avi imecha ve'kach lecha misham isha mibnos lavan achi imecha," and then ve, the next two pesukim are both with the vavs, "Vekel shakai yivarechoscha and v'itim lecha esberchas Avraham." So it's all contingent. That sounds like Yaakov is saying that you should go there, and when you go there, everything is going to kick in. You're going to get all the brachos, everything is going to be because of that. So therefore, it says Rebbe Yaakov, that's the point, that okay, now that he's activated his plan, he has locked his hold on the Bechara. So now we're officially saying, who's Rivka? Aim Yaakov Esav. Yaakov first and then Esav, because he officially has the Bechara. The Shabbos Rabbim also quotes from the Sefer HaBris that the reference here is to emphasize about Rivka, that Rivka is Aim Yaakov Esav, and that we want to understand here that she's still their mother, both of them. She's still the mother of the two brothers together. So she's worried about both of them. She doesn't want them to come into fight because maybe one will kill the other in either direction. So she doesn't want Yaakov killing, she doesn't want Esav killing Yaakov, and she doesn't want Yaakov killing Esav. So because she's the mother of both of them, that's a part of this whole plan here to put some space between them. Shai Beis Rabim also quotes from another sefer from Sinsenes Haman, that to go back to this question of Bechor, that he's emphasizing what's left out, that the idea that is Aim Yaakov Esav, but it doesn't say the detail of who's older or who's the Bechor. So he understands the emphasis is that you should say that there's these two brothers, but when you identify yourself to love, and you should say that there's these two brothers, well, I'm a brother, but don't say that Esav is older. Why not? So you could think through what would the whole problem be. So you may recall that, first of all, Chazal tell us that there was a shmu out there that Lavan has two daughters and Yitzchak has two sons, so the oldest for the oldest and the youngest for the youngest. So one concern is that they're going to want to say, if they know that there are two brothers and this is the order, that Esav should marry Leah. So, okay, so Yaakov was interested in Rachel anyway. But we also know, what did Lavan say? That part's explicit in the pasuk, right? What does he say? I don't want to marry off the younger one before the older one. So he'll say that you want to marry Rachel, that's fine, but first your older brother's got to come and marry Leah, and we'll wait for him to show up before anything happens. So clearly that's going to undermine the whole problem, undermine the whole plan. That's not going to be very safe for Yaakov. So therefore it's crucial that he leave out this information that he has the older brother. You can say he has a brother, but to say that Yaakov is older, that's going to cause all kinds of problems. Half the problems were already caused by the fact that Leah was older. But to mention also that Yaakov was older, that she was telling him to leave out. Other pshatim as well, in the Cheshuv Sofer, he says that you might say, how could the parents, how could Yitzchak and Rivka send him to Lavan? Lavan was the house of a Zara, maybe they'll be influenced. So maybe he'll be influenced. So that, therefore, the pasuk emphasizes, look, he already lived with Esav. He's a brother of Esav. He was able to survive that without being influenced. So therefore, it's reasonable for them to trust that he would do okay in Lavan's house also. There's a similar pshat, maybe a little different, in the Aznayim LaTorah, Litzkirav writes that they wanted to emphasize that even though there's a lot of bad in that family, but there's a lot of bad in all the other families too, so at least this family has the good yichus of the connection to Rivka and to Yaakov. That's a whole mixed bag. So it was the least bad option. So you shouldn't think that they're being irresponsible here. You should understand that this was the least bad of the possibilities. The Shabbos Rabbim also quotes from the Sefer Nesina Leger that the idea was, the parents were just emphasizing here, that the relationship to Lavan, Yitzchak, that Rivka was the sister of Lavan and the mother of the boys, that they trusted Lavan to take care of him. That when Esav would come, which we saw earlier, that's what the Malbim was saying why he went there in the first place, that they trust that Lavan will watch over him. The Sefer Marpil Nefesh, Al Torah, has an interesting shot that we know, if we're assuming that this is still the case, that Yitzchak has been taken in by Esav, that Yitzchak thinks Esav is great. So maybe he thought that that's relevant here. So the mother, Rivka, has two sons. They're both wonderful, according to him. So how could she be so lucky to have two wonderful sons? You know, the Gemara says in Baba Basra that as a reference really more to a time when everybody was raised in the house, but as Rebecca Kamenetsky explains in that context, but the Gemara says that you should look to the mothers, when you want to get married, you should look to your wife's, your potential wife, you should look to her brothers, because that's how the kids are going to turn out. So here, going in the opposite direction, Yitzchak thought that he had these two great sons, so it must be that Rivka's brothers must be pretty good too. So therefore, That's what he was thinking. So I don't know if that's enough. That's I think 10 pshatim in that pasuk. And there's more. Rav Schwab has a whole long essay about this. So it's a little similar to the Kavata Kashesa, if you remember, we discussed a few weeks ago, that when you say there's no answer to a question, it's taken as a dare. Everyone is taken as a challenge. So here, Rashi just says, there's 10 explanations at least or more as to what the message could be about this pasuk. Okay. So to continue, the next pasuk Rashi doesn't say anything. Vayari sav ki verach Yitzchak es Yaakov v'shilach osav b'den aram v'chachas lo mishamisha v'baruchu osav v'yitzav lo v'lemar lo sikach isha mivnos knan. So we see that Esav is going to be two references, and we'll discuss in a moment, to Esav chapping something, to Esav seeing what's going on. So Esav saw that Yitzchak had blessed Yaakov and sent him to Padan Aram to get married there in his bracha and his commandment that you should not take an isha mibnos knan. Now, parenthetically, one of the many topics we could explore here at length, if we had the time, but again, this aliyah is too packed to allow for all the topics, and I hope you appreciate how that happens. But there's so much. There are many halachic sugyas that are relevant to this brief aliyah. So one of them, just this idea, which is a quotation of the earlier pasuk, that Yitzchak said, "Lo sikach isha mibnos kan," you can't marry somebody from the daughters of Canaan. So is that binding? If a parent says you're not allowed to marry someone, is that binding?
No.
So it's a complicated issue. So those who were here last year, especially in the Heilig Yijun, when we were learning Hilchos Kibud Av Ve'Eid, so you might recall that there's a Ma'arik, and again, this is a very long discussion, just they're bringing it up now, that the Ramah quotes a Ma'arik, that a father cannot tell a son not to marry who he wants to marry. That being the case, it's a complex issue for a lot of reasons, a lot of moving parts. And there's a lot to talk about that. In general, if the situation ever comes up, it requires a lot of Eitza and a lot of careful thought, because it's not an easy issue to address in real life from either side. But strictly speaking, there's what to talk about. And that's also one of the topics that is suggested by this aliyah. Okay, so in any event, it doesn't matter because it's not a conflict here in this case, because Yaakov doesn't have a problem with that. Okay, so he's going to go. The Netziv has a comment that he comment in this pasuk, he says that the tzivoy was only about Canaan, that he shouldn't marry somebody from Canaan. He didn't say, he wasn't actually mitzavah him that he should go to Lavan. That part was an etza. So the tzivoy was on who he should not marry, and to go to Lavan, that was an etza. So he says that that's also shot on the next two pesukim, I guess, because the next pasuk says, "Vayishma Yaakov elaviv, v'yelimo v'yelach paden aram." So Yaakov listens and he goes to paden aram. And the pasuk after that says, "Vayar Esav ki ra'os benos knan be'enei Yitzchak aviv." So Esav sees what's going on. He sees that his father really doesn't like the girls from Knan. He sees, he understands that there's really some issue here. So the Netziv has a comment that, as you could say, this is a little bit of synergy here. And we'll say that because we like synergy. So we're going to go for all the synergy. But this really is, I think this is significant. This can count as real synergy for us. You'll see it right away once I start to explain. So why is Esav all of a sudden hopping things? Why is he all of a sudden appreciating things? So the Netziv's approach is that that's the significant point. That don't marry a girl from Canaan, that was a tzivoy. But to go to Lavan, that wasn't a tzivoy, he was just being megala his ratzon that that would be a good idea. And Yaakov listens to that too, not just to the tzivoy, but he listens to the gilui ratzon, to the revelation of what his will is. So that's what impresses Esav. Esav, okay, I gotta think about that a little bit, now I gotta see what's going on. So what is that evocative of? Sorry? The Bechana and everything that we talked about, also to go back 2 weeks, is evocative of the Ran, right? Everything that was a lot of synergy on this point, this idea of being responsive not only to its explicit tzivoy, but also a ratzon. This is this recurring theme in our discussions about Dini D'Rabbanan. So that's being brought out here, and that also is where you have this impression that's being made on Esav. Reb Moshe Feinstein in his Darash Moshe, in the next pasuk, he comments a little bit differently. He says that the reason Esau's paying attention, why is he paying attention now? So he already heard the tzivoy. The father was clear that you shouldn't marry from the daughters of Canaan. So how come all of a sudden now Esau is picking it up? So he writes that the chashivas of this instruction manifests itself in the fact that it was followed. The fact that Yaakov actually did it, that's why it carries weight. And he has a mustache moves there to rebay him. He says that's why it's so important that you try to live an observant life also, that you're not just teaching, but you also practice what you preach, because that's where the message is really going to get across. So if you want to really make a point, so then you have to display it, and that's what he was copying here. Okay, so Gifter has a comment here, which is going to get us into the last pasuk. The last pasuk alone we could speak about for an hour, if we had an hour. Those who were here on Shabbos, we spoke about some of the themes during the Parsha Shir last week. So if you were here for that, you'll have to borrow from there, because we won't have time to go into everything. But there is a little bit of a complicated message here, because what happens in the next pasuk is not clear. So first, just to read the words of the next pasuk, it's the subject of a lot of discussion, a lot of directions. Just lost the page here a second. So the next pasuk, sorry, my thing just went off. Technology. Okay, so in the next pasuk, what happens? Vayelech Esau, we see this lead up that Esau has seen that the Canaanite wives are not pleasing to his father. Vayelech Esau el Yishmael, Vayikach es Machalas Bas Yishmael, Ben Avram Achos Nevayos, Al Noshav Lo Lisha. So, okay, what's the flow? He hears his father is very upset about Canaanite wives. He had Canaanite wives. So what does he do? He goes to Yishmael and marries his daughter. Is that good? Is that bad? What is that? So it's a little unclear. Rashi has a language that sounds like it's very bad. Rashi talks about being Mosif, Rishal, Rishaso. But as we'll discuss in the next few minutes, there's a lot of mixed messages. What seems to be the statement, and what seems to be the Tzad HaShava in the mixed messages, is it seems like this was an attempt to do something good on some level. That Esav is catching on that his father is unhappy with wives from Canaan. So okay, he'll try to fix it. But here's where there's a range of interpretations. So is that good? That's tshuva? Or is that a very clumsy effort towards tshuva for any number of reasons? First and foremost, because it's not clear that he divorced the previous wives. So if he's worried about the bad influence of the Canaanite wives, so it doesn't help just to add another one. He's got to separate himself from their influence. You know, it's like if your parents are upset that you're eating a cheeseburger, so you say, it's okay, I'm having it on challah. So you still have the cheeseburger, right? So it's not going to negate the challah. So is that the idea, that Esav was just so confused that he didn't understand that that's not really going to help too much? Or is it that he came to this idea too late? That's where you find different attitudes of criticism in terms of what's going on. So, for example, Rav Gifter in the Pirkei Torah, he writes that the issue was this kind of confusion. And he says that Esav is chapping that Yaakov won, that Yaakov has prevailed in this whole story. And that's why Yaakov is the one who the parents care about. That Yitzchak doesn't want his son marrying a Canaanite wife, but he seems to only care about Yitzchak, about Yaakov doing that, not about Esau doing that. So that's a clue that Yitzchak prefers Yaakov, that Yaakov has won. So this very clumsy effort, he says, okay, so I'll marry a Bas Yishmael, but he didn't divorce the first one, so that shows that it's a mix, it's a mess. He has the language there. I don't know if this is intentional, because it is an interesting parallelism. He refers to that, Rav Gifter refers to that as kibra ve'eim be'erbuvia, all mixed in, you know, mixed good things and bad things all mixed in. So it's a complete mess and doesn't really help anything. So I don't know if he intends to draw this parallel, but a contemporary of Rav Gifter was Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz was Rosh Yeshiva of Mir. So one of the most memorable sichos in the very chash of the Sefer Sichos Musar, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz and Sichos Musar are all worth reading, but a couple that are very well known. So one is, he talks about the notion of Or V'Choshech Mishtamshin Birbuvia, that same word, that when you have light and darkness all mixed in together, it leads to a mess, it leads to just confusion, and people do things that don't make any sense. So it's interesting because that sicha was about Eliphaz, it was about Esav's son. So he's saying essentially that that's the midah runs in the family, that here Esav does this kibud aveim, it doesn't make sense. He's like, oh, you should be so happy, daddy, I'm marrying this Bas Yishmael, when it's not really going to help, he's still married to the Canaanite wives. And Eliphaz does something similar. That's the topic of Chaim Shmulevitz's sicha, that Yaakov sends him to, that Esav sends Eliphaz to kill Yaakov, so he feels conflicted. Also, this issue of kibud aveim, he doesn't know how to handle it, because his father says he should kill Yaakov, but Yaakov's his Rebbe, and surprisingly, Yaakov doesn't want to get killed. So it's a machlokas between his Rebbe and his father. So what should he do? So Rashi there quotes that he takes away all his money on the Chashuv Kameis, and that was his yishuv. So as Rav Shmulevitz explains, it's a pretty crazy thought. You don't have to be miyashiv to do. It's clear, and this is good advice, just so you should know if it ever comes up. If your parent says kill your Rebbe, don't do it. It's not something that you have to figure out some kind of a way to resolve. It's pretty clearly outside the parameters of kibud aveim. It's the marriage thing. It's a different discussion, but it's pretty clear that kill your Rebbe is not included. So why didn't Eliphaz chop that right away? So says Rav Chaim Shmulevitz that he had good and the bad mixed up in a way that it couldn't make any sense. So it's interesting that Rav Gifter is using that same word here, that essentially that's a midah in Esav, that Esav was expressing kibud aveim, but in such a confused way that it's not really helping anything. And Rav Hirsch has a similar comment. Rav Hirsch says that the issue is that he's just clueless, because this he should have figured out a while ago, and now he finally figures it out, so his answer is just to marry somebody else. And that is what shows that Rivka was right about him, that he really wasn't roy for the brachos, he really wasn't going to be the right choice. And Simchas Lebroid and Sam Derech has a similar comment, that even though Esav was the big expert in kibud av, that was his strength, but still, you see how his taivas overwhelmed him and led him into a inconsistent path. And that's the whole problem. So to say a little bit more, a lot more, about this pasuk. So first of all, just from the beginning of the pasuk, Chazal have a comment that Vayelech Esav El Yishmael, that Esav went to Yishmael, so there's a purpose here, but the connotation is that Esav went to go connect to Yishmael. And the Gemara in Baba Kama and Daf Tzadi Beis and Beis, the Gemara says that there's an inyan, and that they use as imagery of, if you have a bad tree, it goes, you have a barren tree, so the bad tree goes to hang out with the barren trees, with the trees that are not the fruit-bearing trees. So what exactly does that mean? It's a confusing phrase. Then on the Gaon, in his Chidush HaGadlus, he explains that when you have somebody who has nothing to do, somebody who's idle, so then they go and they hang out with the bad guys. That's when the Yitzhara gets a hold of you, and that's what's happening here. So Esav doesn't have anything productive to do, so he goes to connect with Yishmael. That's not going to work out well, that's not going to be a good influence, but that's what happens when people are in that position. Okay, so there is, I mentioned the shir that we gave on Shabbos, there is a big inyan here that we spoke about in the context of Parshas Chayisara, because there's a lot to talk about. We'll just call your attention to it for a few minutes, that the name of Mochalas is something that Chazal pick up on. That the idea of Mochalas as a name, which apparently wasn't her actual name, the Yerushalmi in Maseches Bikurim, in Perek Gimel, Lacha Gimel, Yerushalmi says that you see from here that a Chasan gets Mechila, Yom Chupasa. So this is one of the reasons that there is a minig among Bnei Ashkenaz to fast on the day of the wedding. It's a fascinating topic, had a big impact in Parshas Chayisara, so I spoke about it on Shabbos. If those of you were there, that the notion is that one of the possible reasons for this practice of fasting that is prevalent among Ashkenazi Jews, Rav Avadya Yosef has a tshuva that among the Sephardim this was not the practice, but among Ashkenazim is taken very seriously, and the Magen Avraham refers to it, and the Beis Shmuel refers to it, the Rama refers to it. They all explain the possible attitudes. And one of the reasons Myra Mintz is quoted by the Beis Shmuel and by the Magen Avraham as giving two possible reasons for this practice. One possibility is because we're concerned about shichrus. We're concerned that if you eat, you're going to get out of control and you're going to get drunk, and for some reason that's a problem. We spoke about this last year also by Riches in the context of Kiddushin. The other reason is this idea that there is kind of a personal Yom Kippur happening on the day of the wedding, and therefore that is recognized through the Tainus. So that's a fascinating idea. It's an idea that many people are very impressed by. It's a beautiful kind of idea. So Chazal connected to here, to the language of Machlas that's used for Esau's wife. The Gemara also has a similar concept in Masechet Yevamos and the Bavli and Samach Beis. There is always a discussion which connects to the Lumdus. It's a very long pilpul about whether it's equally applicable to the Chasan and the Kala. And you have to figure out both, because if there's some issue of not being intoxicated, then you have to figure out what that issue is and does it apply equally to males and females. And this issue of Mechilas Avonos, why is it there? We'll talk about that in a second. And does that apply equally to males and to females? So that all becomes a part of the pilpul, because once in a while, the Chas and the Kala will say that they feel that they can't fast on that day. And there's a cheshbin, so what should you do about it? So many poskim are a little more makel, or a lot more makel, for the Kala, because there's some room to be mesupik if all the svaras apply equally to the Kala and to the Chas. But Tashbetz has the girsa and the Yerushalmi of Avonaseah, that it's her averis too. So, and Rama already, when he writes this minik, he writes the chasin and kala. So the earlier sources, they speak about the chasin and kala equally. It's just when they try to figure out the lumdus behind it, so in the later svarim, they're mafalpal about it, and they find reasons to raise questions to come out a little bit more lakula on the side of the isha. I always tell people that I think it's kedai to have this fast. It's an important minig. And the idea that it represents a kapara, so the kapara doesn't have to be on the day of. It can be close to. So if somebody feels they can't fast on the day of the wedding, they should pick the day closest to the wedding that they can fast and take that opportunity for tshuva beforehand. And therefore, if somebody feels, Chasan or Kala feels, that they are not going to be able to cope with fasting on the same day, they're not going to make it to the chuppah if they're plotzing. So then that's what I recommend. They should move the fast up. And they also recommend that, which is against what anyone else ever did. But the usual attitude is that if the wedding day is on a day when it's not proper to fast, let's say on Hanukkah or on Rosh Chodesh, Chalmo, you're not allowed to get married for other reasons, that's a din daraisa. But let's say a day like Hanukkah or a day like Rosh Chodesh, so they just skip the fast. So I recommend to people that they shouldn't skip the fast, they should push it up. They should fast the closest day that's appropriate. And that doesn't have to be the same day as the wedding. So, but Didi Havovda, I got married on Hanukkah, so he fasted a few days before the closest possible day. Hi.
With regards to the technicalities of that fast, does it function like any other fast during the year in terms of? Like, is it like on the level of like Tishba and Yom Kippur, like you should be wearing leather shoes?
No, so that we know for sure not. But other detail, everyone agrees doesn't involve leather shoes and those other inuyim. But there are other questions that are very much contingent on this issue. You know, so how chomer is the fast, and just in terms of should you be avoiding everything, or is it really just about things that are close to intoxicating? And also the timing of the fast. So let's say the chuppah in the middle of the day. So does the fast stop then, or does it keep going? Or if the fast is after Shkia, So do you keep the fast going until the chuppah, whatever time it is, or does it stop at dark? So these are all issues the poskim have been mevalpel about, which seem to be contingent on the two reasons. So one of the reasons is what's presented here, this idea that there is this kapara. There's an interesting idea in the Sefer Lach Metoda, which connects to one of the possible reasons why there is this idea, that maybe the notion is that it's like creating a new identity. Maral writes that until you get married, no offense to anyone in this room, but you're a half a person. And when you get married, you become a complete person, so you're taking on a new identity. Others point to the notion of taking on new responsibility is itself a kapara. And that's why you also find the same sentence, not just by a chassan, but also by a nasi, somebody who becomes in a new position of authority, or also by a ger, somebody who converts to Judaism gets to start over. So the Lach Metod is a fascinating idea that suggests that you get 20 years from then before your averus start counting in Shemayim. Because just like this notion that in Shemayim they only give onshin for after 20 years old, so if you get a reset at this point, so then, you know, right. So he gets get another 20 years. That's a pretty good deal. So in any event, the Shlomo Kluger writes in his Tshuvas, Elifu HaShlomo, that the idea of Chasen Dom Melech is based on this, that just like a Melech, he takes on the authority and gets a kapara as he rises to Gedula, so too does the Chasen. So these are some of the explanations, that it's either because you become a full person, or you take on a new level of responsibility, or because you're distancing yourself from past averos. That's one angle. Like Stav Sofer writes like that also, that whatever this guy has done in the past, now he's committing himself to an isha who's going to be a protection. So therefore, that's a source of tzchus. Others say it's because of the positive mitzvahs, because the idea of puravu, that you're taking a step towards, and that's about binyan ha'olam, that's such an important mitzvah. So that should bring a kapara. These are all among the suggestions. One of the major questions, which is relevant just to reading this pasuk, and is relevant to the whole issue, is what do we mean when we say that there's a mechilas avonos? Do we mean that there is an automatic mechilas avonos for everybody, or that it's an opportunity for mechilas avonos? That it's a chance that if you capitalize on it, you will get a kapara, but it's not automatic. Now, the fact that we have used this as a reason to have a tainus, that seems to indicate that it's an opportunity, because if it was just a get-out-of-jail-free card, so then why bother fasting? Just have a big party, which you do afterwards, but the fast doesn't seem to be necessary. We're just given a free pass. So then what do you need the party? What do you need the fast for? So the idea of fasting, and also we have the vidui associated with the wedding day, these practices seem to suggest not that it is an automatic mechila, but that it's an opportunity for mechila. And therefore, to take the opportunity, that's the smart thing to do. And that provokes the whole question about this pasuk. What exactly is the pasuk suggesting? So how does Esav fit here? Why is Esav the venue for this message? Is it saying that he did tshuva and that's why he's getting mechilas avonos? Or he didn't do tshuva and he's not? Or he didn't do tshuva and he is? How exactly do you read the pasuk? We go to Tzvi Dushinsky in his commentary here, Taurus Ma'aretz. He writes that that's Rashi's idea of Hosef Risha Vishaso, that it was an opportunity for him to really start anew, and he messed it up. That's the whole point, that he could have been getting a mechilas avonos and moved forward. And the fact that he maintained the connection to his old problems, that's what made it worse. And they draw the comparison, the idea like the Gemara has of Bol Nara Marasa of Yom HaKippurim, when he wants to talk about a real big Avera, so it mentions this Avera, which is an Avera by itself, happening Davka on Yom Kippur. So maybe the same idea also, that on Esav's personal Yom Kippur, he still wasn't really getting the message, and that's the point. So that's the whole discussion about the role of tshuva for this process. The Yoznayim LaTorah has a comment here that the reason Esav is used as the model is first of all to show that even a big Rasha like him could potentially get kapara, but that it's not free, that you need to do something, and that Esav was on the way, that he was having these hirhure tshuva, that he was trying to turn himself around. So okay, that's something. Some bring a raya on this point from the Gemara Maseches Kedushin, we definitely spoke about last year, and you always hear about it Elul time. It's one of the most frequently quoted sources in tshuva discussions in Elul, that the Gemara has a statement in Maseches Kedushin that if somebody is Mekadesh and Isha, and he says, I'm an Asha Nitzadik, I marry you on the condition that I'm a Tzadik. So the Gemara says that even if he's known to be a really terrible guy, it's a Sufik Kedushin. We still treat it as if it might be good, even though it's known that he's not a good guy. But the wedding might be good because Shema Hirhir B'Tshuva, that maybe he had thoughts of Tshuva that we don't know about, and therefore he might actually be a Tzadik, and we have to worry the Kedushin is good. So in Elul time, it's always discussed about the power of even Hirhir B'Tshuva. You see, just a thought could turn things around, that even this guy is known to be a scoundrel, but we still have to worry that maybe he's secretly a Tzadik, because maybe he had Hirhir B'Tshuva. But there was a discussion some of the Sfarim have. I have to wonder if this is really such a question. But they say that why should it be a Safek Kedushin? It should be a Vadek Kedushin. Because if Chassan gets Mechilas Avono, so therefore all his Averis are gone. So that's the idea. So the Melech should work. I'm not sure why that's so compelling, because you could say it's all Habba Hatalia, that it's only going to get the Mechilas Avonos if the Kedushin is good, so if the Kedushin is contingent on his Tzidkas. But all right, it's some distinguish between Erison and Nesuin on this, some distinguish between being a Tzaddik and just having Averis forgiven. So there's a lot of interesting discussion about this, but it all goes to the question of what exactly is the nature of this idea. Is it a free get out of jail free card, or is it an opportunity? Seems to be that the fact that we have it as a day of tainus and a day of vidoy, that we relate to it more as an opportunity. But believe it or not, there's still more to say about this, so I'll just to try to quickly fill in a little bit more. So, and we're leaving out a lot, but just to fill in a little bit more. So, achos nevoyos. So, why is that mentioned? Bas Ishmael ben Avram, achos nevoyos. So, why the fact that she was the sister of nevoyos? Why do we need to know that at this point? So, Rashi tells a little bit about that also, that apparently Ishmael died after the engagement. So, therefore, it was nevoyos who actually walked her down to the chuppah, who actually married her off. So here it's a fascinating. There is a Medrash Agada over here, and the Chazal have this idea in a few places that Esav actually had quite a scheme over here. That what was really going on behind the scenes in this pasuk? That Esav thought that he's going to go marry Yishmael's daughter. He's going to go to Yishmael, get in with him, and he's going to convince Yishmael to kill Yitzchak. He's going to rile him up about Yitzchak's role in the whole story. He's going to convince Yishmael to kill Yitzchak. And then he'll be the Goel Hadam for Yitzchak's death, and he'll kill Yishmael. A really evil, manipulative plan that Esav apparently had here. The Netziv, in his Herchav Davar, talks about this, and he suggests that that's what's conveyed in the previous pasuk, or two pasukim before that. That whole pasuk, Vayar Esav, Ki Verach Yitzchak, Es Yaakov, Veshilach, Aso B'dena Arum, Lakachtim Shem Isha. Esav saw what was happening. He saw that Yitzchak had blessed him and the like. So that's when he started to really get mad. And not just because what happened earlier in the parasha, that Yitzchak went along with it. Okay, fine. But now to see, he's really totally embracing it, and he's giving him the Shidduch advice, and the whole story. So now Esav's blood is really boiling. So that's where he really wanted to do something, but he couldn't tell Yitzchak that that's the plan. So he said, okay, I'm going to go marry his daughter. That's the plan. He had a cover story. A different second time today we're talking about a cover story, but he had a cover story for his secret plan, which was really all about killing Yitzchak through Yishmael. So what happened to the plan? So say there's a contemporary sefer called the Shiurei Chumash that says, it's a good question, what happened to the plan? That if we say, like there's some synergy to last week, we're discussing this similar topic last week, Shvi, about whether Yishmael did tshuva or not. So if Yishmael did tshuva, so then, okay, that's what happened. Yishmael wasn't going to go along with the whole thing. But if he didn't do tshuva, so what happened to the plan? So he says, that's the hashkacha, you see, that he died just then. So Esav wasn't able to carry out his plan, but that was his initial plan. The Netziv discusses this also in the Hamek Davar. He discusses both on the top and the bottom. So in the Herchav Davar, goes into more detail, but in his top commentary on Chumash, the Netziv writes that once Yishmael died, so then Esav rethought the whole thing, and that's when he did tshuva. So that's that Esav did tshuva, and that's what's going on. And if you look, there's a psik between Machlos and Yishmol, to make the point there that Machlos Psik Bas Yishmol, to show this represents his breaking off of the whole mentality and his attempt to do tshuva. So we will give the last word once again to a certain great Machaber who discusses the question of, and here's total synergy to last week's parsha, it's the same question exactly, same Shvi of last week's parsha, same question last week we talked about Yishmael and that whole discussion, did he do tshuva or not? So here's a lot of real overlaps, real parallels. So there is a discussion, what about Esav, just like Yishmael? That was Esav always bad? Was he born bad? Or did he start off as a tzaddik and become bad later? So who discusses this? Rav Yosef Engel. And the Beis HaOtzar. He discusses both of them. So last week we talked about Yishmael, here Esav. So he discussed this question. So he notes, on the one hand, the Gemara in Kiddushin refers to Esav as the Yisrael Mummer, as if he was somebody who went off the dark. He was first Yisrael, and then he followed the wrong path. But on the other hand, there's also language here and elsewhere that talks about Esav considering or going through Geirus. It sounds like he was completely outside at the beginning, and then considered converting to becoming a tzaddik. So he discusses there about how the Lashon Geirus is also sometimes used for tshuva. It's also used just to represent somebody doing something better. And then he has a fascinating comment. I don't know if this counts as synergy, but because it goes to the last time we spoke about Shmini, but it was last year. Right? So Shishi of Shmini, the last time we spoke about Shmini. So Shishi of Shmini, I guess that comes out to 148th. In that Aliyah, we spoke about Chazir. And there's a fascinating comment, which may or may not be a Medrash, so just dispute whether the Medrash actually exists, but some Svarim quote a Medrash that the word Chazir, a pig, a symbol of all treifness, is actually ultimately going to be kosher, and Asil Achziru Li Yisrael, it's going to be returned. So it suggests not only that it will be kosher someday, but that it used to be kosher, and then it's going to come back. So he says the same kind of language with Esav here about the Mummer Yisrael, and he thinks that those who interpret that Medrash about Chazir as a remez to Esav, that Esav someday will come back. So whatever happened, that maybe there's going to be tshuva for Esav ultimately, and that's perhaps the message. So that's a positive note, so we can leave on that, and we will close here. And we'll daven mincha. So we'd like to daven for us.